welcome back to another episode of Tech Can't Save Us podcast, brought to you by Literal Humans. As usual, I'm your host, Paul David.
I'm William Gatsby.
And I'm Rebecca Hedman. We want to say a big thank you to all of our regular listeners. And if you're listening in via Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please do share a rating. We are grateful for your support. And this just lets us know that we're continuing to reach the right crowd and build the Tech Can't Save Us community.
Coming up for this week's episode, after the incredibly protracted 118-day strike, Hollywood actors have finally reached an agreement that sees their creativity protected from the likes of artificial intelligence technology, AI technology. This comes roughly a month after Hollywood writers called time on their grievances. And on today's pod, we're going to be looking at just how AI has played a relatively outsized part in all this, and if we can expect to see similar issues raised in other areas of society.
Yeah, so let's get to it. Hollywood actors have announced after nearly 4 months that they have brought to a close one of the largest strikes of any industry. They've been off for almost 4 months. So just want to quickly recap the events before we jump into kind of what we think and some insight and analysis. The Union for Actors of America went on strike in May. The Writers Union then also walked off the job in July. This is the first time the industry has faced a dual stoppage of both guilds since the 60s. The strike involved concerns about the use of artificial intelligence in the entertainment industry, with writers and actors both worried about AI undermining their roles and in many ways replacing a large amount of their work. Back in July, some of the studios that are on the other side of the strike offered a groundbreaking quote-unquote AI proposal to protect digital likenesses of actors, but that was countered that the proposal stipulated background performers could be scanned, paid for the day, and then turned into digital characters that the studio could use for, and quote, the rest of eternity, end quote. That standoff has meant that AI sort of went from dinner party what if to a full-blown international issue. All of Hollywood ground to a halt for, you know, 4 months, losing billions and billions of dollars. Many production companies cancelled their contracts for various writing projects and acting projects. And ultimately, we've ended up with this compromise that's also kind of brought to a... I think this is probably the first time that AI's really been brought to the attention of the wider public. It's such a highly publicized standoff that affects everyone. It's not directly related to this, but it's no surprise that US President Joe Biden recently signed an executive order specifically aimed at curtailing the power of commercial AI. So yeah, some of the terms of the deal, some of this is not to do with AI. The writers managed to get some improved payouts, some agreements for sort of what does and doesn't constitute writing, got a 5-6% annual minimum rate hike. So that's like positive. Regardless of AI, writers have been quite abused by the Hollywood. So there's a bunch of stuff in there to fix some of that generally, as well as the specific clarifications around AI. The agreement clarifies AI isn't a writer and its output is not source material. Writers can use AI with consent, but it's optional and it's disclosed use. For AI training using writers' work, that's where things get a little bit complicated. This agreement itself specifically recognizes that there are quite big legal uncertainties. There's sort of general empowerment of the writers to assert prohibition, but it's far from hard and fast rules. And then, yeah, there's some lawsuits outstanding against OpenAI that might impact Hollywood's practices further down the line. There's a lot of this that needs to go through the courts, go through government regulations, so we'll kind of see how that ends out. And then the final thing that the Actors Guild specifically fought on was pushing back and getting complete agreement that you cannot do the scanning of actors and specifically extras to then fill out a scene in the background where, you know, a jobbing actor that is cutting their trade for the first time. You usually start in extras work. You get like a good week, 2 weeks worth of pay to be on set. Hollywood was trying to replace them with just AI scans. So that's specifically been taken off the table. And then there's a bunch of sort of other empowerments towards writers and actors in terms of royalties and payments on streaming. Again, before AI was in the mix, just the advent of streaming and large streaming meant that there's a lot of actors and writers that would have their work shared and viewed by like tens of millions of people, but receive real pittance in terms of their paycheck. So there's a bit of a course correction on sort of Netflixes and Amazon Primes of the world and sharing a fair share of the profits with writers and screen actors. So there's quite a lot of things they were pissed off about as well as AI. What do you guys make of this? It's been one of the top stories for the past 4 months. AI, Hollywood, George Clooney, all in the mix. What did you make of the last 4 months and the ultimate decision that Hollywood to basically fold and compromise much more than they ever said they would at the outset.
Yeah, I mean, just from like a labor perspective, I'm really glad that the writers and actors stood their ground. Per usual, I'll pull out one of my favorite quotes from the Wired article. This one's from Duncan Crabtree, Ireland, who's the executive director and the chief negotiator for SAG-AFTRA. He said, "They've got a 2023 business model for streaming with a 1970s business model for paying performers and writers and other creatives in the industry. That is not okay." That really sums up what was happening here, which is we've got these advances in new technology. We've got new ways of streaming and how we're even like creating content specifically to AI when it comes to writing and the reuse of images and things like that. But we want to pay people for just like a small slice of their contribution to that, recognizing that like human actors and writers, to your earlier point, Will, are source material, and that source material can be duplicated by AI. But, you know, how are folks ultimately compensated for the consistent replication of that source material? I think that is just like a really interesting question across the board for AI, across all industries, of like AI is leaning on source material from humans, but then replicating it in a million different permutations. And I think this is some of the stuff that folks are trying to get at with NFTs and some of the blockchain stuff, is like, how do you continually reward people for, you know, their source material and things they produce and continually deliver value? I think that's a really fascinating question in tech right now, when there's so many different ways to reproduce the work that people are doing using AI and other tools. So yeah, really glad to see like the actors and the writers get their dues and some of the compromises here. But I think if there's still a lot of open questions about the use of these various bits of technology, and interested to see where it leads, like other sectors, like how other sectors will look at this deal and then try to sort of maybe replicate what the studios have done. Yeah, just curious to see where it takes us. What do you think, Rebecca?
I think it's really interesting as well, especially when we look at the creative industry, because I think this has been an industry where there's been a real great area the past few years with the introduction of AI. And I think seeing it brought to the forefront, the unions actually taking action and trying to protect the little guy in some ways, in terms of like the actors and writers, I think it's really profound. And I wonder if it's going to have more of a stronger effect on other creative industries and areas where, you know, there may be not as many advocates or many protections in place. It's good to see these unions going up against these huge film companies and actually getting an outcome that they desire, and protects not just the actors and writers who are protesting, but all the creatives to come, the next generation growing up with AI ingrained into their practices daily. You know, we see young people in universities and colleges getting to use AI to their benefits, and I think these things are being ironed out, and what they will help to do is protect the next generation from having any qualms or disagreements when it comes to AI being used against their will. And I think it brings into a good question about giving consent, and something that we've discussed here on Tech Can't Save Us before about AI and consent. And it's something that I think needs to be discussed, needs to be implemented. And I'm quite glad to see that the writers and actors have got what they wanted out of it. It's had a huge effect. There have been a lot of postponed filmings and scripts that haven't gone forward. So I'm glad to see that they've had their value recognized. It's having some interesting after effects.
Yeah, I think, like, ironically, for something that's been one of the leading tech stories of our time, really what this shows us is the power of unions and like how necessary they are, something that's almost as old as trade. Like, that's the real takeaway here for me. The scale of this strike really is quite unprecedented. Like, I can't really think of an entire industry going completely offline for as long as this did, with as much economic implications and ramifications. I saw one of the articles, they estimated California alone had lost $6 billion just from the strike. Almost every major film that was under production has been affected, like Ghostbusters. Why have I started with Ghostbusters? I don't know. It's just the top of my list. That's not a massive film. But, you know, like Gladiator 2, Godzilla, Frozen Empire, like these are all big productions, and we've quite frankly had 4 months of really shit film and video content available to us on streaming services because of this. But yeah, I can't think of anything that's mobilized as many people, had as much economic impact, and lasted for as long as this has. Like, I've been really impressed by how truly they sat and played chicken with the production companies, because most people do tend to compromise more than they have. So, like, all power to them and the unions. I think they actually did a really good job of keeping public support, holding the production companies to the fire, and just making it a very easy choice for both the public and the government of just like, well, who am I going to side with? Multi-billionaire production companies that already make a lot of money, or unions and all of the most famous people in the world who everyone loves, who are like on Instagram and social talking about how they support the strike. I think the only sort of like maybe downside for this I worry about for other industries is like, you probably don't have George Clooney and Brad Pitt and every like famous person in the world on your picket line for most other industries. So does that then change things? We'll get to it in a bit, but like some of the other industries that maybe haven't had quite as much visibility on their struggles with AI have not landed with this sort of agreement between employees and employers.
There's a whole piece here of like how the various societal structures that we have, be they employment contracts, laws, you know, legal frameworks, in terms of like, you know, jurisprudence, for example, like what have the courts decided on this? What are the regulators doing or saying? Like, I think there's this piece around how they haven't quite caught up with the technology. And so companies are doing what they naturally do, which is like rolling out this technology to their best benefit to you know, maximize profit, which makes total sense. But the regulatory framework and to some extent the social framework of like how we even think about this and how it relates to our jobs hasn't caught up yet. And I think that's going to be like just an ongoing conversation of like, yeah, the tech is all good, but like, how does it sit within our society based on what principles and norms that we've set around it? I think that's going to be an interesting conversation. Just to like take us forward a little bit, I mean, Will, you alluded to this, it's already starting to affect other creative industries or the larger creative industry. So for example, music companies are taking a cautious approach to AI, and there's, you know, obviously a need for new technologies as streaming growth, you know, slows a bit. So previously, I think the music industry has been a bit hostile incorporating AI, but YouTube, as we know, which is a major player in music and AI, they've starting to convince the industry to embrace it with different tools that they have for, as we discussed before, permission, attribution, and monetization. So kind of if we can get underneath that issue of, you know, who's the source material, who created the source material, how are they attributed to, how are they monetized for that? I think that helps us go a long way. They hosted an event for creators back in September and unveiled a bunch of new AI-powered tools, which include assistance for video backgrounds and dubbing. I think it's important to think about how YouTube is creating a platform that allows different voices of major musicians to roll out what they're doing, and then also, you know, think about how they can use AI to enhance the tools or even create new forms of music using the tools. I think it's interesting to put yourself in the shoes of like an amateur creator who's like uploading a video or a song, and then you don't have any of the major music companies participating with you, but you can create something and maybe use those tools to like accelerate your career. I think that's really interesting. And then where does licensing fees come into that? On some level, these AI engines need to pay license fees to artists for their work. So if YouTube or any other tech company ever wants to offer this kind of tool to different artists out there, millions of users, for example, it'll need to figure out a way to pay them. And I think that's going to be just kind of an ongoing conversation. Obviously, these companies are going to want to maximize their profit continually. So they're going to want to keep those payments down. But we're back to that problem of source material, who's creating it, and how are they compensated?
I think it's an interesting point, Paul, because again, we come back to this whole situation of having these theoretical questions around AI being used in the creative industry and how they will actually play out in real time. Because this is a tool that YouTube were thinking about rolling out and have not been able to because of these theoretical questions behind it, behind the licensing, behind who gets the credit, who actually is going to participate. And I think that what it does is it actually opens up the conversation for regulation and actually understanding how to navigate these AI tools. One thing that is actually quite interesting as well is the fact that we have these really interesting and innovative tools that we use over the years that we don't even realize that were probably, you know, just theories at one point. When you look at like Apple and all of the things that they've rolled out in terms of technology and their contribution to the music industry, at one point they were just theories and they were not actual concepts. So I think from one angle, it's like I do understand the reservations and the concerns that come from the creators and the smaller artists and creatives behind the origins of these music or lyrics or whatever it is, voices. But I think we need to try as creatives, you know, embrace AI, embrace these new technologies, because that's how we move forward. And that's how we, as you said, like advance into the next step. So I think whilst we are looking at the reservations and having these concerns and obviously doing it in respectful and important ways, I think we need to try and get on board and move forward with it, because essentially it does propel the industry.
Yeah, I think it's like the difference between exploit or enhance. Some of the stuff in the, you know, the specific standoff between the actors and the writers was just like, yeah, well, no one thinks that's okay. Like, the ability to scan a dead actor's likeness and then put them in films without their permission, like, it's not cool. On the flip side, though, the ability to automatically dub every YouTube video in any language in the world, that's fucking cool. That's very, very cool and really, really useful. Makes video content more accessible. I'm sure it takes some work off the plate of translators and graphic designers, but I don't think that most people would have a problem with that. Similarly, the ability to record a podcast like this and have it automatically translated in the host's voice using AI into any language in the world, that looks like something that will be available in 2024. And again, I think that's just objectively cool and makes our industry better. We would never pay for this podcast to be translated into any other language because, you know, just we'd have to re-record it with voice actors and stuff. You know, it's a lot of money and time. But with AI on it, the idea that we could actually reach an audience in multiple countries is very cool and exciting. So I do think as well, like, that is something that the smart people in this conversation flagging is like, you know, it's not all AI is bad. It's just that there's specific stuff that was in the production companies of Hollywood's sort of demands that I don't think anyone could really ethically get behind. But there is a lot of cool stuff in the creative space that the technology is doing. I think is quite a lot of the come to Jesus moment we're facing right now in the creative industry is actually far more been built by streaming and sort of the advent of the internet. And it's just taken quite a while to catch up of like a large part of the terms in the Writing Guild was just stuff to do with getting paid fairly for a series that goes viral on Netflix and gets like 100 million views. And that's just like rectifying the, hey, we used to have a cinema based economy for Hollywood and now we have like a streamer based one. And I think similar on sort of Spotify, YouTube, you're seeing a lot of the like demand being like, hey, I don't want to get paid 0.00002 cents on the dollar for every time they stream my music. So there is like a sort of wider conversation going on as well as AI of just like, how do we fairly compensate the people that have come up with original source material? So yeah, I think that will be ongoing across music, across film, across YouTube influencers, a bit of everything.
I think the point about unions is a really interesting one because you look at how unions are organized, at least in the US, and they've been gutted over the past few decades and to a great degree. So I worry that, like, as promising as this is for what the actors and writers guilds have come up with, I'm worried that with each successive negotiation, unions are going to be on the back foot unless they're sort of negotiating this stuff at the national level and trying to get, you know, legislation and get regulation at the national level that sort of cuts across the board. I think it's going to be them always on the back foot trying to like prevent these different companies of negotiating ways to basically do what companies do, maximize their profits, improve efficiency using the tools that are out there for them. So it is promising to see these executive orders, for example, coming from President Biden to kind of reduce the risks that AI poses to consumers, workers, minority groups, and national security. But as you know, Bradley Tuss, the CEO of Tuss Ventures, mentioned, without a real enforcement mechanism, the executive order doesn't seem to have it. And the concept is great, but the adherence might be very limited. I think that's a really poignant and thoughtful quote, because where are we actually seeing the regulation from the government saying, hey, you know, we're going to protect wages in this specific way, protect jobs in this specific way? Whenever that stuff's negotiated at the local level, that's an opportunity for companies to basically eat away at, you know, wages and so on and so forth. So you worry that like these individual debates about AI in the workplace need a more overarching regulation, labor protection. You see other countries, for example, like Finland's a good example, where teachers' wages are debated and teachers' working conditions are debated at the national level, which allows them to not have these debates at kind of like the local, you know, municipal or state or something like that level. And I think that's going to be a really interesting thing, as like AI is going to have so many different impacts in so many different places. And so if we don't have an overarching policy about it, I worry that there's going to be the inevitable eating away of workers' rights, of jobs on the whole in general. So how does the government really like see that for what it is and come in with regulation to protect folks?
I think we're actually already seeing that, you know, Paul, because even in the art industry, we've had this case in the US where a US district judge has dismissed a copyright infringement claim, which was actually brought forward against Midjourney and DeviantArt. So they're AI creator tools. And actually, they were dismissed, but one of the claims against Stability AI was allowed to proceed. You know, talking about these cases on an individual basis, what that basically has done has brought forward this question about how can creators prove likeness or prove that AI has actually copied their work? And I mean, the cases that didn't quite make it, the reason that they were dismissed was actually because their copyright was not filed before the lawsuits. So I think we're already seeing the kind of judicial system coming into play here on an individual case-by-case basis. So I guess one of the impacts of not having that overarching guidance or regulation is that we might see our kind of judicial system start to be inundated by these small claims here, there, and everywhere. So I think we need to kind of think about how we can have a way for artists to prove their likeness, or should they have to prove that their copyright's been infringed? I mean, when we think about copyright in here at the agency, you know, we do work, we don't have to prove that we've done that to get paid. So should that be the same for the artist industry? I don't know. These are some of the questions that just kind of spring to mind.
Yeah, and to Paul's point, until you have a unified standard to hold this by, it'll always be piecemeal, where writers and screen actors get a win because they've got a strong union, and then the artists' claims have been largely dismissed. The stuff around Midjourney training its algorithm on artists' work without their permission has proven very difficult to prove and enforce. So yeah, until the law courts have got specific yes and no's, it'll always be a bit of a case-by-case piecemeal basis and be broadly down on how you can win the court of public opinion rather than the court of law. Nicely takes us to our final topic on this. Like, what do you guys think in terms of AI regulation? One thing that did stand out to me that was interesting about this, that was related to this, was like the executive order that Biden signed in place about AI and commercial AI, which I'm sure wasn't totally spurred on by the Writers and Screen Actors Guild strike, but was definitely a large part of it. That's probably the fastest I've ever seen a government move on tech, like in terms of even trying regulation. Like, it's pretty unclear. There's a lot of work still to be done, but I certainly don't think 2 years into social media, we were seeing anything like the sort of appetite to regulate and get on top of the industry. So yeah, what do you guys think of the movement that the US government and other governments have already made in all of the statements and regulations around AI? How much protection do we need? What does that protection look like? Yeah, what does a safe world with AI look like to you guys?
Yeah, I appreciate the speed. And I think, I mean, it's a good sign, if nothing else, right, that they're taking the threats that AI poses seriously. And I think there's a space for balance here. I appreciate that some of the trade associations, for example, have organized and put together with, you know, what they're calling an AI red tape wish list, and just making sure that whatever regulations come forth, they're not stifling new companies and competitors from entering the marketplace and sort of creating so much red tape and expanding the power of the federal government that, you know, innovation is really stifled. So I think that's like an important consideration, is like, as much as we are like pro regulation for this stuff, like there is good work to be done in this space, and we don't want the government to necessarily curtail that. But at the same time, like, people's jobs are on the line, and it's good that the government is maybe leaning on the side and like erring on the side of cautiousness by coming out with these orders and saying, hey, let's pause this. And you're even seeing this from the industry itself. You're seeing major folks who've been leading on AI say like, hey, let's pause this thing. Let's slow things down. Let's take this step by step to really understand the implications before this thing gets out of hand. I think that's like a really healthy moment for humanity when you really think about it, because, you know, we've seen what happens with letting industry run rampant when it comes to climate change. We're now dealing with the effects of that, and we're kind of starting to see the forest for the trees and say like, hey, let's pump the brakes a little bit on AI, because we can already start to see it ruffling feathers in specific industries. I think that's really healthy.
I think it is healthy, but I worry as well, because I think it will vary from government to government. And you've got somebody like Max Tegmark, who is actually the president of the Future of Life Institute, and they are actually a tech policy think tank. And he has basically said that the United States is already far behind Europe. So it makes me think, how are the world leaders syncing up on this and making sure that there's a fair playing ground? Because what tech companies are able to get away with, maybe in the US, for example, they couldn't do in Europe. Will this then have wider consequences for the tech industry in the US or the tech industry in Europe? I think there needs to be some general or flat baseline where all governments can start from and roll out globally, because otherwise what we might start to see is tech companies going, you know, behind that red tape that you described, Paul, and finding new ways and means to actually go under any regulation that's been enforced in that particular country. So I think, you know, there are some great areas there. There will be some great areas. But I think the fact that the tech industry and the government are aware of this and are working to try and find some way to coincide and work together, that does give me some hope.
Yeah, I think there's definitely like a huge concern here. And I appreciate that the Biden executive order focused on this in terms of the huge risk that AI can heighten bias and even cause civil rights violations. One of the good parts of the order was that, you know, they gave guidance to folks like landlords and different federal benefits programs and federal contractors to basically keep the AI algorithms from being used to exacerbate discrimination. I think that's incredibly important. We've heard so much talk about that in the ramp up of AI over the past few years. And also, I think getting into the weeds, like the order also calls for the development of best practices to address harms that AI may cause to workers, including job displacement. They're also putting together a report on labor market impacts of AI. I think that's really excellent, like in terms of integrating government with business and like really getting into the weeds of, okay, what are the best business practices for AI? How is this going to impact, like that's the role of government right there, is to understand and measure how it's going to impact citizens and then connect the dots with business to make sure that there's an overarching plan. But I think that's what I'm getting at, is like, you know, the federal order kind of sets the stage for an overarching plan for how governments deal with AI, and not like, hey, let's solve it in individual court cases or individual labor agreements, because I feel like that's going to be so piecemeal and it's going to create basically this like fractured environment of regulation, which I think is really a problem. I think you see that in like education and other areas where like each little school district and each little municipality has different regulations on this stuff. And especially in the US, it's just so, it's overly diversified, I would argue. And there's not these overarching rules about things like that. So, and it's why things are allowed to run a bit more rampant over there, and partly why Europe is ahead of it, because they take things more holistically.
You don't want to see a world in which each state sets its own AI legislation. And even in Europe, where slightly more lax states have different rules, and you know, it's, yeah.
Texas? Do we want Texas setting our AI regulations, y'all? Like, let's be serious. Florida? Like, let's get real.
No, yeah, 100%. And that is like across so many different things in the states in particular, why it does end up so disjointed and fractured, because the federal government shits the bed, throws responsibility at the states, and then you end up with this disjointed piecemeal approach. To end on a slightly pessimistic note, I think the scary thing is that like every country is paying lip service to the AI debate and how fearful they are, whilst also pumping an insane amount of government resources into making sure they're the ones that generate the most powerful AIs for various uses in terms of war and commercial reasons as well. So there is a bit of like, everyone wants all the benefits of AI with none of the downsides, but I think it's hard to see a world in which you invest in all of the positives and don't get the downsides, or that governments have truly thought out all of the true impacts of what this could do to our economy and our jobs market. So, and even like stuff where we see, which I think we all see as a win, where like, you know, Joe Biden does release that executive order. Some of the feedback of like the CEO of Tusk Ventures was like, there isn't really an enforcement mechanism for this. So without that, it's legislation that doesn't have the teeth that it suggests it does. So definitely something we like need to keep putting pressure and visibility on across the board to make sure that like various governments who are paying lip service to it have to follow up with true actions.
There is a real debate out there. There's more disagreement about the state of play than we're letting on here. Like, I think there are genuinely a lot of actors who think that the US is ahead of the game because so many of the AI innovations are coming out of the US and different companies there, because you know, everything is so unregulated, deregulated, regulation hasn't even started. Whereas Europe is jumping on it and saying, hey, we got to get ahead of this thing and make sure that we have. But that's going to be the issue, is like China's going to have different regulation, as is Russia, as is the US and Europe and things like that. So like, what does a global approach to AI regulation look like? Because I think that's what it's actually going to take. And I think that's what some of these folks who are pushing for this pause are nudging us towards, is like, hey, we need to be solving this like we solve climate change, or we're trying to solve climate change. It needs to be a global effort, because the reach of AI is so broad. So it's a bit scary, but you know, hopefully we can take some of the lessons we've learned from how we've begun to regulate things like nuclear energy and you know, nuclear weapons, climate change, even things like clean air and like just things like that, and apply it to AI and maybe even move a bit faster. So that's the hopeful bit, I guess.
Till Trump gets elected and just deregulates everything and destroys all the progress.
There's that too.
For the last part of the show, we will just play a small game. It's called AI or Artiste. So we have four sort of film plots, and we're going to decipher together whether they were created by AI or artiste.
Sorry, artiste being like a real human being.
Artiste is myself.
I'm outstanding.
The artist in question. Okay, so the first one. In a future where emotions are traded as commodities, Jackson, a scientist, discovers an anomaly, a love virus. He accidentally infects Eden, a rebel artist. As they navigate a society devoid of love, their forbidden connection sparks a revolution, challenging the cold, calculated world and proving that love can't be quantified. And this is called Ephemeral Embrace. AI or artiste?
Ephemeral Embrace. I feel like this has to be AI. If it isn't, I would be very surprised and impressed that this is something you had created, because it is so off the wall and bonkers.
I'm going to go with artiste because this sounds like the plot of something I've read about recently that was like just the marketplace of, you know, emotions as commodities sounds familiar. So I'll pick artiste.
Let's have a look. This was actually an AI.
Just goes to show you, we're going to have a hard time with this going forward. You know.
The fact that it's derivative of an idea that you've already heard kind of highlights a lot of the problems with AI.
Yeah, oh gosh,
precisely,
yeah.
Precisely.
Okay, let's move on to number two. Years before the revolution, Guraj and his family had lived in a quiet fear of a raging dictator who unleashed terror upon the region of Assam. In the nail-biting moments of conflict, Guraj has to choose between fleeing with his family and staying to defend the honor of Assam in a terrifying battle of evil versus good. This is called The Uprising.
I'm going to go with artiste again.
Yeah, I think artiste for this. I think this is your work, Rebecca.
It is, and it will be coming to a cinema near you soon.
If you left the company to publish a film, I wouldn't even be annoyed. Like, I'd just be like, yeah, fair play, you do your job.
Okay, number three. Agent Enola Hunt infiltrates a dangerous organization threatening global stability. Uncovering a personal connection to this conspiracy, she races against time, battling betrayal and deadly enemies. As alliances blur, survival demands ruthless tactics in this high-stakes spy thriller. It's called Rogue Pursuit.
I reckon artiste again. I feel like this is some of your work.
I'm gonna go with AI just because of like the way that's written. Like, it just gives me AI vibes.
It's AI. It was not artiste.
We're currently joined on two each, Paul. So this is the tiebreaker.
Man, this has been the tightest competition. Last one. In the midst of winter, when the air starts to thicken, the townfolk of Sinclair Valley remain safe inside the comforts of their home. For centuries, they've cowered from the dark and chilling spirit that looms over the fields, collecting victims like trophies. When a new family from the big city arrive looking for a fresh start, they uncover the sinister truth. To break the curse, they must unravel the mystery or become the next victims in Sinclair Valley. The Curse of Sinclair Valley.
I'm gonna roll the dice on AI.
I think it's also AI too.
You're both wrong. It was me.
As if Sinclair Valley was you, man. I would not have guessed that.
I quite like a little chiller.
Yeah, man.
Like a thriller, horror.
Well, I mean, yeah. I think you're the real winner of that game, Rebecca.
Yeah, I mean, the beginning of the last one should have gave it away, because in the midst of the winter, I don't believe that is grammatically correct. So.
No, that's in the midst of the winter. That's fine. Well, folks, that's a good place to call it a day. I just want to thank all those who continue to support us. We kindly ask you continue to share Tech Can't Save Us podcast with your networks. Always remember, you can catch up on episodes via Spotify and Apple Podcast. And as always, be sure to hit subscribe to stay in the loop and share the episodes with your personal and professional network. Anyone you know who like to listen about tech and all things tech for good, send us their way.
And don't forget, you can also subscribe to our monthly newsletter. If you head to our homepage, literalhumans.com, there's a ribbon banner right at the top that shouts out the newsletter. If you subscribe to that, you'll stay up to date on every podcast that we do, as well as cool updates on funding opportunities, job roles in the world of tech. Thanks for listening as always, guys, and we'll see you next week.